talking about the formation of the Constitution, and what a week to be talking about the Constitution. I think it was Thursday, there was a ruling, a significant ruling, and Friday, of course. What a blessing. I never thought I'd see it in my lifetime that the Supreme Court would overturn Roe versus Wade, which unfortunately 63 million babies have paid the price for. But we want to thank the Lord for that, and we should really be grateful for that. But it's interesting about the Constitution. One ruling on Thursday was about something, the right to bear arms, that is in the Constitution and very clearly stated in the Constitution. The other ruling on Friday, the Roe versus Wade ruling, is about a topic that is not in the Constitution. It's never been in the Constitution. It was created out of nowhere 50 years ago. The right to privacy does not appear in the Constitution. That's a made-up privacy. And so it's interesting. One had to do with the Constitution. One had to do something that's not in the Constitution. And we'll even talk a little bit about that. But so last week, we're talking about the Constitution and the making of the Constitution. And if you remember, just to review quickly, that 1 month in, June 28th or so, to what would end up being 4 months of deliberation as they put the Constitution together in 1787, it was going nowhere. In fact, it was on the verge of falling apart. And the delegates were angry at each other. They were frustrated. The arguments were fierce. As I said, it was probably about to fall apart. And then Benjamin Franklin stood to his feet, and he had been writing notes. He had said very little during this time. He was the revered old man of the country at 81 years old, brilliant man. And he said that, he made a speech that, just to paraphrase, he said, how has it happened, sir, that we have not once thought of humbly applying to the Father of Lights? He refers to our verse that we're memorizing to illuminate our understandings. In the beginning, when we were at war, we had prayer in this room daily, and the Lord certainly heard and graciously answered those prayers. And so he submitted to the men there that he implored them that he said, henceforth, the prayers imploring the assistance of heaven and its blessings on our deliberations be held in this assembly every morning. And that remarkable speech really changed everything. Washington, for one, was thrilled, George Washington, as he knew personally the power of prayer and that God had miraculously saved the country in the war a few years earlier. After a few days, this is June 28th, so a few days later on July 4th, which was a very important holiday, and we'll talk about that later, he personally led the entire group through the streets of Philadelphia to a church for a special church service on the 4th of July. And then the group had pastors pray over the proceedings each morning. That week, one writer said, the Lord of the Winds displayed his mercy by sending dramatically cooler weather, and as the very air itself changed, the delegates finally started working together. And after Franklin's reminder, the participants had kind of come to see their labors in a more of a historical and eternal context. On July 16th, this would be about a month and a half right into the deliberations, the convention agreed on what was to become known as the Great Compromise. And this is the maybe the fight that had held up the convention for almost 2 months. And it was the idea that the large states were worried that the small states were going to have equal representation, and the small states were terrified that the large states would overrun them in the votes and that, and they would have no, in a sense, say. And so the Great Compromise is, of course, we're used to it now, and it seems simple to us now, right? But this was the major hang-up in the proceedings. And the larger states were given two seats in the Senate, and the small states were given two seats in the Senate, and the large states were protected by having more representation in the House of Representatives. And so finally that roadblock was broken after about 2 months, and Madison said the most serious and threatening danger seemed to have passed. The second great issue was state sovereignty. And this is very interesting and very important, but many were very concerned that the federal government would get too much power. Think of that. Imagine that. This was solved by agreeing that the Constitution was the supreme law of the land. So the Constitution was the supreme law of the land as it is today. However, and this is huge, this is the big deal, the national government could only have those powers that were enumerated in the Constitution. So it was the supreme law of the land, but the national government could only deal with the powers that were dealt with in the Constitution. Everything else was sent back to the states. Now that's very important, and that's exactly what the ruling about Roe versus Wade was about. So the justices said that abortion is not discussed in the Constitution, has nothing to do with the federal government, and we are going to send it back to the states to decide. And that's exactly, this is a victory for the Constitution Friday. That's what this was. And so this is exactly, the Constitution has been flipped on its head for 50 years with this ruling, and now the justices said, this has nothing to do with us. We're sending it back to the states. And so great victory for the Constitution. This is exactly the second biggest fight that they were worried about, was that the federal government would make up things and gain too much power. So the convention was to continue for about two more months. But by and large, these two compromises had entered the major crisis. There were over 560 roll calls. The debate was contentious until September 15th, the last working day of the convention. Eventually, the final motion was made to agree to the Constitution as it was written. Not everybody agreed with that at first, but they decided to agree with the Constitution as it was written on September 15th, and it was presented to the delegates for votes. The outcome was far from certain. Nobody really knew in that room what was going to happen. It was uneasy. It was very anxious as they sat there, and as each person was given a chance to vote. Washington implored them to stand and line up by states and sign or not sign the Constitution. And he personally signed it first, kind of like John Hancock did, the largest signature is his signature, the very first one. At the end of the vote, every state had voted yes. And 2 days later, the Constitution was signed and sent to Congress. Well, the fight was far from over. Now, the states had to each agree to ratify the Constitution. And the Constitution specifically said that nine of the 13, would have to ratify the Constitution for it to be law. And many people were against it, including most Baptist preachers. They were against the Constitution as it stood. And there was the secular group, the secular group was known as the Anti-Federalists. They were against the Constitution as it was because they felt it had too much power. That was the biggest thing, giving the federal government too much power. They were afraid they were giving the presidency too much power. Remember, we had just separated from King George, a terrible despot, and we were afraid that the president would gain that kind of power and rule havoc over the people. And so there were the Federalists who were for the Constitution, the Anti-Federalists who were against the Constitution as it stood. As I said, many Baptist preachers were also against the Constitution. There was no guarantee of such basic rights as freedom of press and trial by jury. These were not mentioned. Freedom of religion, unreasonable search and seizure. None of this was listed in the Constitution. And so this is what scared Baptists, especially because freedom of religion was not in the Constitution. And the rights were mentioned, but they weren't specified. And, of course, the Baptists, the biggest issue, as I said, was freedom of religion. And had one author said, had they come this far and fought this hard to continue to have a state church? Had all this been for naught, that now we wouldn't even have freedom of religion mentioned? And so they were against it. The states began to ratify the new document. Delaware, New Jersey, Georgia, Connecticut, after a very contentious fight, Pennsylvania. So that was five states. The sixth state was Massachusetts. They called a convention in January of 1789 to consider ratification. The debate raged on for over a month. Eventually, the Federalists, those who were for the Constitution, won the day. But it was only because it was promised that there would be a Bill of Rights added to the Constitution naming the God-given rights. Maryland and South Carolina also voted yes. And when South Carolina's vote was announced, there was a wild celebration that broke out. And when some order was restored, the great South Carolinian Christopher Gadsden spoke to the convention. He was very old. close to dying, and he realized he probably wouldn't live long enough to see the new country put together. And he stood up and he said, paraphrasing Luke 2:29, he said, "I shall say with good old Simeon, Lord, now let thy servant depart in peace, for mine eyes have seen the salvation of my country." And great, great statement. He paraphrased that verse. And now all eyes were on Virginia. Virginia is arguably the most important and the largest. It is the largest state. One-fifth of the country lived in Virginia. It was a huge state, which is now three states, West Virginia, Kentucky, and Virginia. And so all eyes were on Virginia, as this was probably the most important vote. And in Virginia, Baptist pastors were against ratification, as I've mentioned. They were led by a very influential pastor named John Leland, and I can't go into that story. I've told that story 10 times, one of the favorite stories in American history about John Leland, but I will go into it a bit. But basically, James Madison, who is considered now the father of the Constitution, he wrote most of the Constitution. He needed to be elected to the Virginia ratifying the Constitution ratifying convention in order for the Federalists to win the day in Virginia. And he was in New York working on something else, and he got a letter from his father. And his father said, "James, you better get back to Virginia very quickly." He said, "You're about to be defeated. And the first place you go is to the Baptists, because they are against this document because it doesn't enumerate the rights, the right to freedom of religion." So he rushed back to Virginia. And when he first came into Virginia, he went right away to the home of John Leland, who was the pastor in Orange County. And this is the pastor, as I said, that was so influential in trying to stop this Constitution from being ratified. He knocked on the door of his home. Mrs. Leland came to the door. She said, he's not here. He goes every morning into these woods and he prays. And she said, "Maybe you can find him in there." And so this great moment in history where Madison finds Leland in the woods praying. And it's exciting, I think. And there they talked all day long. At the end of the day, Leland was convinced that Madison would write a Bill of Rights and include that in the Constitution. And Leland decided that there wasn't much time left, that he would throw his support behind Madison, who was the one that would bring victory to the Constitution. He did. Madison was elected. The rest is history. The Virginia voted to ratify the Constitution. And now the Constitution had its ninth and tenth ratification, and it was now the law of the land. And I'll talk about it next week, but, you know, the miracle of the Constitution. Somebody's written a book called The Miracle in Philadelphia. Just a wonderful time now that we look back on it, but a very contentious time, and nothing was assured that we would have the document we have today. The words themselves are a miracle, as I think really God guided these men to put down these things. And the proof, I suppose, is that the Constitution has led this country for almost 250 years. There's only been 15 times beyond the Bill of Rights that the Constitution has been amended in those 250 years. Two of those, actually, it's really 13, because two of those cancel each other out. But the genius of the Constitution and the miracle that God really gave to us is something we need to thank the Lord for. And we'll take some time and talk more about this. But I wanted to tell you this. I have some copies of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. If anybody's interested, if you haven't read the Constitution, I think every American should read the Constitution. You might say, "Oh, it's old English, so I'm not going to understand it." You'd be surprised. You'd be very surprised what you'll understand. And really, how do we know if Washington is doing their job if we haven't read the document that they're supposed to be following? And so I have a bunch of these up front. If anybody wants one, I'm happy to give you one. And I think it's interesting that the picture on the front is Washington imploring the convention delegates to sign the document. And that's kind of what this book is about. In the back it says, will you pledge to read this, as Washington asked the men to do back then. So you're welcome to have one of these. I don't have enough for everybody, but I have one for many of you. So I want to thank the Lord this morning for the Constitution and God's giving to us this great document.